Hello, hello. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Campbell. It's great to have you here. Today we are discussing our trends article for the month of October, and the trend that we are discussing is the idea of tourism, but different types of tourism. In the past, people usually only traveled for business or pleasure, but lately, there have been some other reasons that people have been planning trips. But before we get into all that, allow me to introduce our friends here. We have Michelle back in the studio. How are you today, Michelle?
Hi, I'm doing great. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you. Now, what is something you learned from yesterday's lesson, Michelle?
Something that really stood out to me was that expenditures on food services in the U.S. topped $201 billion, which I knew food tourism was a thing, but I didn't realize how big it truly was.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, it makes sense because we do travel to eat sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? You yourself were sharing
yes.
yesterday that you would go and bring your passport and travel across the border just to have dinner.
Yeah.
So it is something that people do. All right, and we have Edith here. Edith, you are from L.A., and L.A. has a lot of great food, right?
Yes, it does.
A lot of Tex-Mex or Mexican food, right?
Yeah, we do.
Now, my wife is from L.A., too, and she tells me that, you know, you shouldn't, like, Mexican food, you can't go to, like, the grade A. You know, A just means, like, it's really clean and really good. You have to, like, go to, like, the grade C if you want good Mexican food. Is that true?
Yeah, and also a place that you can find amazing food is San Diego, and they have a lot of really good Mexican food there, too.
I think I want to take a food tourism trip to California. That would be amazing. All right, so what is something you learned from yesterday's lesson?
Going off of a little what Michelle said, I was really mind-blown how a quarter of the whole industry was spending a lot on food tourism.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, a lot of people are traveling just to eat, and we talked about being hardcore food and vino lovers and being a foodie. Do you guys consider yourselves foodies?
Yeah.
Yeah? You enjoy food. Do you guys cook?
No.
No?
I do sometimes.
You do sometimes? Yeah. It takes effort to cook, but I think when you can make a good meal for yourself or for your friends or family, it's fun. It's fun. And we have Amanda here. How are you, Amanda?
Good. Good to be back.
It's good to have you, as always. And Amanda, you're the one that kind of chose this article for us because you noticed these trends that were happening. And are you kind of a food tourist?
Yes. I do like to go to a place for the food. I'm reminded I went to Thailand a year and a half ago.
Right.
And I think Taiwan has actually made me more adventurous when it comes to food because there's such a food culture here.
Right.
So when I went to Thailand, I was very deliberate in getting out into the markets
yes.
there and in experiencing the local food from the locals' point of view.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never planned a trip solely because of food, but I definitely always incorporate food into my plans.
Right.
Like whenever I plan a trip back home to New York, I always have a list. I'm like, okay, Mom, Dad, I need to go to these restaurants because this I can't get this in Taiwan. I have to eat this, you know. So I definitely always incorporate. And then when I take people on trips, I always, you know, plan food into it. You know, like when you're talking about Thailand, you when they have the mango rice,
yeah,
that is amazing.
Yeah,
I love Thai food.
Their curries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and we talked about gramming yesterday, and we had our young people instruct us on what gramming is because, you know, it is kind of a younger person thing. I am starting to get more into gramming. Maybe I need to get into it more. That is definitely a trend, right?
Yeah, I have Instagram on my phone.
Yes.
But I've still got to get
I rarely open it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you notice how Michelle, like, described it with such confidence because she knew it really well. She does it a lot. Okay. So, that was yesterday. We talked about food tourism. Today, we have two other types of tourism, and they're a little bit different. but just as interesting. So let's get into our article. Our article today is on page 31 of our advanced magazine, so please do open your magazine or join us on your mobile device, and we'll start at the top of the first column.
Two, wellness tourism. Humans have been going on health-driven vacations for millennia. Think ancient Romans traveling to mineral baths, or sun-starved Victorians flocking to Mediterranean climes on doctor's orders. These days, wellness tourism is a nearly $500 billion a year industry, and it's estimated to grow to $680 billion by 2017. Wellness travel is one of the fastest growing tourism categories today, says Beth McGroarty, research director at the Global Wellness Institute. GWI defines wellness tourism as all travel associated with the pursuit of maintaining or enhancing one's personal well-being, whether physical, mental, environmental, or spiritual, a definition that McGroarty says is willfully broad because it spans many kinds of travel. Destination spas, health and wellness resorts, fitness or adventure-focused travel, like hiking, water sports and cycling, hot springs and wellness cruises. Even mainstream hotels are adding more health and fitness programming. McGroarty is positive that wellness tourism is far more than a passing trend. In the coming years, the concept will increasingly reshape tourism and how people perceive what they want to get out of travel as we've known it.
Now, yesterday we said that food tourism in the U.S. in 2012 topped $201 billion, and we thought that that was a lot of money. But today we're talking about an industry that is a $500 billion a year industry and is estimated to grow to $680 billion by 2017. Now, that is a huge industry. What industry are we describing here?
We are talking about the wellness tourism.
That's right, wellness tourism. Now, we start off saying that humans have been going on health-driven vacations for millennia, right? So yesterday we talked about the word pilgrimage, and so these people have been taking these pilgrimages for millennia. What are we talking about when we're describing something that's been happening for millennia?
A millennium is a period of 1,000 years, or the time when a period of 1,000 years ends. So something that's been going on for millennia has been going on for a period of 1,000 years.
Right. Okay, so this is something interesting to learn, just an English tip for all of you. A lot of times when a word ends in U-M, if you want to make it plural, you will take off the U-M and add an A. For example, we talk about media, right? Media, social media, or news media. Media is actually the plural word for medium. Medium. So millennia is many thousands of years. So people have been taking these trips for health reasons for millennia. And we have a couple of examples here. What are the two examples that we're giving here, Edith?
Ancient Romans traveling to mineral baths, or sun-starved Victorians flocking to Mediterranean climes on doctor's orders.
Right. So people traveling for health reasons. We all know that mineral baths are things that are good for our skin and good for our health. And sun-starved, which just means that they don't get a lot of sun. Mm-hmm. You know, they're probably very pale, and they need some sun for that good vitamin D. So doctors are sending them over to the Mediterranean climes. What are we talking about when we talk about a climb?
Well, climb is a word, we're talking about a place where the weather is different in a particular way. That's where we get the word climate from.
Right.
You know, a particular country has a different climate, comes from how the weather is different. For example, in Taiwan, the climate is quite tropical.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm from in New Zealand, it's more mild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so different climates. And we're going to the Mediterranean climes, the Mediterranean referring to the Mediterranean Sea. All right, and so it's more of the beach where there's a lot more sun. All right, these days, wellness tourism is nearly a $500 billion a year industry, and we described that earlier. That's kind of a lot of money.
It's a lot. You said yesterday $201 billion for food?
Right.
This is more than double that.
More than double. Yeah, and we hear from Beth McGroarty, and she is a research director at the Global Wellness Institute, or GWI. What does she say about wellness travel?
Beth McGroarty talks about how wellness travel is one of the fastest growing tourism categories today. She says that all travel associated, or she defines wellness tourism as all travel associated with the pursuit of maintaining or enhancing one's personal well-being, whether physical, mental, environmental, or spiritual.
So this is really interesting. Wellness travel is one of the fastest growing tourism categories today. Did that surprise you?
No, I don't think it surprises me, because I feel people are realizing with the stress of everyday life, you know, work-related stress, that they need to be more active and actually resting while they're on vacation.
Right. It's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times my wife says that when she goes on vacation with me, she needs a vacation after the vacation, because I tend to be very go, 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 you know, and I like to do a lot. And for her, she just likes to just, she's like, I'm on vacation. I just want to rest.
Right.
And to me, I'm just like, no, we're on a journey. We're taking a tour. We need to see the world. So, yeah. I think she would probably enjoy one of these wellness vacations, right? Mm-hmm. And she has a very broad definition, right? And she says it's willfully broad, which just means it's on purpose, this definition. It's on purpose that it's so broad, because it spans many kinds of travel. So what are some of the examples that we are given here about wellness tourism, Edith?
Some examples are destination spas, health and wellness resorts, fitness or adventure-focused travel, like hiking, water sports, and cycling, as well as hot springs and wellness cruises.
Yeah. So this is kind of a little bit different than what I thought wellness tourism was. And I think what I thought is also a part of this. You know, I thought it meant like people traveling abroad to get medical procedures done.
Right.
You know, yeah, and that's something that people do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you know, maybe from the States or in Western countries, they'll travel to Asia. I know people do come to Taiwan sometimes because Taiwan has really good health care.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll travel to Taiwan and it's cheaper here, and they'll get some medical procedures done.
Right.
And I think that's also a part of this wellness tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And maybe that's more the category of health tourism, because wellness here is more kind of about just the idea of spiritual wellness or physical wellness. And so being able to rest and getting massages and getting and soaking in hot springs, and these wellness cruises sound fun. You know, maybe you can take some yoga classes or some fitness classes.
Right.
Yeah.
And the food is probably quite healthy and dealing with the whole wellness thing.
Yeah, holistic. Yeah. And
yeah.
So it's kind of healing for you. And even mainstream hotels are adding more health and fitness programming. And that's true. You know, most hotels offer massages, in-room massages, or they have their own massage parlor in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And fitness programs. So they have these gym and fitness classes available. And McGroarty is pretty positive that wellness tourism is far more than just a passing trend, which just means it's not just going to fade away.
Right.
Right? What does she say about wellness tourism in the coming years?
She says that in the coming years that the concept will increasingly reshape tourism and how people perceive what they want to get out of travel.
Right. So people are no longer just traveling because they want to have fun or see the sights. You know, now people are planning trips because, as Amanda was saying, life is more stressful now. And so they kind of want to get away from it all, and they just kind of want to take time and just rest. I know there's even places where they'll, like, take your cell phone away, you know, and force you to kind of go without a cell phone. How would you feel about a vacation without a cell phone? No more gramming. No more gramming, guys. What are you going to do?
You can't gram your food.
You can't gram your food. You can't gram your massage. All right, so that was wellness tourism, and now we're going to shift into our last tourism trend, dental tourism. And that sounds interesting, so let's learn about that.
Three, dental tourism. A subset of medical tourism at large, dental tourism is the tendency for patients to seek dental work from practices around the world. Again, money is the main impetus behind dental tourism. The higher cost of dentistry in the United States, especially cosmetic dentistry, has created lucrative opportunities for foreign dentists, says New York-based dentist Gary Curatola. These dentists perform treatments such as porcelain laminate veneers, dental implants, crowns, and bridge work, often at a much lower fee. Many U.S. patients are seemingly drawn by the perceived bargain and a vacation in the process. Periodontist Nicholas Toscano says he sees many patients who have gone overseas in the name of saving money. He urges patients to consider that there may be no recourse should something go wrong. It's very hard to jump on a jet again to fly back to the country to have the doctor redo the work.
All right, so dental tourism is a subset of medical tourism at large. And this is kind of actually what I was describing earlier with the health tourism, right? Medical tourism, where people travel for medical procedures, and here specifically we're talking about dental tourism, so dealing with the mouth and the teeth. And dental tourism is the tendency for patients to seek dental work from practices around the world. Now, I have done food tourism in some ways, and I've done wellness tourism in some ways, but I haven't really done dental tourism. Have any of you known anybody who has done dental tourism or medical tourism?
I do not.
I actually have a family friend back in the States where their father lives in Taiwan, but their kids live in America. So then when they come back to Taiwan, they'll come and just get checkups and whatnot for their teeth.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, here in Asia, sometimes the medical cost is a lot cheaper. And that's pretty much why people do this, right? And it says here, money is the main impetus behind dental tourism, right? What are we talking about when we're talking about an impetus?
An impetus is something which encourages a particular activity or makes that activity more energetic and or effective.
Right. So the reasoning, the impetus, the motivation behind dental tourism is mostly about money, right? The higher cost of dentistry in the United States, especially cosmetic dentistry, has created lucrative opportunities for foreign dentists.
So how much does it cost to go to the dentist in America?
I'm not exactly sure, but I know when I do visit the dentist, normally our insurance will pay for some of the cost of the appointment.
Right, so it's not too expensive, but that's kind of why a lot of people are going abroad for this cosmetic dentistry. What are we talking about when we talk about cosmetic dentistry?
I think it's like getting your braces or veneers, anything that would be considered maybe surface.
Right. It's not necessary, right? It's not health threatening, so you don't have to get it done, but it's more for aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
Helping you to look better.
Right.
So a lot of times cosmetic dentistry or cosmetic procedures, you know, whether it's plastic surgery or whatever, that's usually not covered by health insurance.
Okay.
Because it's not life threatening. So you're paying out of your own pocket. And that's why a lot of people are going abroad, because then they're not paying as much out of their own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another example might be LASIK surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I had LASIK surgery done on my eyes, and LASIK is definitely considered cosmetic because it's not life-threatening. I don't need to get LASIK surgery. It just makes life more convenient.
Right.
And I know here in Taipei, actually LASIK surgery is a lot cheaper than in the States. And so even with the cost of a plane ticket, it could end up being a lot cheaper to just do it abroad.
Wow.
Right? And people are going to these foreign dentists and getting these procedures done, and the dentists perform treatments such as we talked about, porcelain, laminate, veneers. What are veneers? You mentioned that earlier, Amanda.
Yeah, it's where they put a layer of material over the tooth to make it look better. So maybe you have a chip on your tooth, and so they put the veneer on so that it looks like a normal tooth, or it looks wider than your teeth normally. Mm. But it also protects the teeth from decay.
Right, that's right. And dental implants, so like dentures, and you know, maybe you're older and you've lost some of your teeth, or you know, you had an accident and you're missing some of your teeth, you need some dental implants. Crowns, which is just, you know, a procedure done to kind of fill in some gaps in your teeth, and bridge work, right? So these are all different medical dental treatments that someone might get, and they're often cheaper when you go abroad. And sometimes you might wonder, well, if it's cheaper, is it less quality? Like, maybe it's not as good.
Right, right?
Quality. The quality is, mm-hmm. is... But I know at least here in Asia, you know, where we live, the dental work is pretty good, you know. And so you can get maybe just as good of quality of work done, but maybe at a much lower price, which is why it's such an attractive thing for a lot of people. And many U.S. patients are drawn by the perceived bargain and vacation in the process. So perceived bargain, which makes me feel like maybe it's not such a bargain.
Yeah, they think there's a bargain. It looks like a bargain, but may not necessarily be a bargain. But I think the next paragraph goes on to see some of the concerns with this industry.
That's right. We hear from a periodontist, Nicholas Toscano. So what is Nicholas Toscano's job? What is a periodontist exactly?
He's a dentist, and he specializes in the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of tooth disease, and also does dental implants for patients.
Okay, so it's a specific type of dentist, right? He's a specialized dentist. And he sees many patients who have gone overseas in the name of saving money. That's an interesting phrase here. When you do something in the name of something, what are we talking about?
In the name of is an idiom or said or done in order to help a particular thing succeed.
Right, so I might take a trip in the name of seeing my parents, right? Mm-hmm. Or I might go to a store in the name of purchasing a gift for my wife, right? So in the name of something. So they're doing something because of something, and they're doing these dental tourism trips in the name of saving money, but they've had to go back and see this Nicholas Toscano because something probably went wrong. Right? So he urges patients to consider something. What does he urge patients to consider?
He urges his patients to consider having dental work done in their home nation.
That's right.
Of the fear of possibly something going wrong before their next appointment and having to buy another plane ticket to get it fixed.
Right, exactly. So there may be no recourse should something go wrong. You know, it's great if you go in and get it done and everything's fine, but if something happens and the work that you got done undoes itself, or if there's a problem with it, you are not going to be able to go back and see that doctor that worked on you.
Exactly.
Right? And so it's going to be very hard to jump on a jet plane and fly back to the country and have the doctor redo the work. And so this is kind of what we were talking about with the perceived bargain. Mm-hmm. Right? It might seem like you're saving money and it might be great if things go well, but what if things don't go well?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, I'm thankful that we live in Asia, and we have a lot of really good quality health care for not too expensive, right?
Right.
So we don't have to travel too far to enjoy this tourism, dental tourism or medical tourism. All right, well, what about you? Do you enjoy traveling? Do you enjoy tourism? Would you like to do one of these types of tourism? Food tourism, wellness tourism, or dental tourism, or medical tourism? Have you ever done any of these things? Mm-hmm. We would love to hear about your travel experiences. If you do want to write to us, you can write to us at letters@studioclassroom.com. As always, remember to check out our QR code at the top of the article on page 30. You'll see some interesting features and an introduction to this article. And, yeah, let us know what you think. Maybe there's some other form of tourism that you do or you've heard of other people doing that is not in this article. You can share that with us as well. In the meantime, we hope that you enjoyed our article and that you learned something new. And please do take care of yourself, and maybe you can start planning your next vacation. All right, friends, thanks for joining us today. We'll see you again next time. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.